Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back. The final hour of the David Bellavia Show here on News Radio 930 WBEN. We continue to get the pulse of the election. Spoke with Dr. Mark Epstein last hour, previewing tomorrow's debate, talking about just how this election season looks and what states are in play. That continues now with Carl Calabrese. Remember, to find any of the show, if you missed any of it, it's available at WBEN.com. And please follow us on social media at David WBEN and on Facebook, The David Bellavia Show.
Yeah, my next guest from Masiello, Martucci and Calabrese, been around for 30 plus years in Western New York politics. And if you listen to the morning show with Brian and Susan, his analysis just blows away the national ABC stuff. It's not a partisan hack analysis. It's sober, it's honest, it's intelligent. And if you listen to what Carl's saying, you find out this is exactly what all the national pundits are echoing. I really appreciate him, have a deep respect. Carl Calabrese, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Oh, thank you, David. The feeling's mutual.
Well, listen, I heard you this morning talking about the different polls and the races that are tightening. One of the things, though, that you don't really hear from the national guys is it's almost impossible to get your head around how Senate races are tightening, but yet you still have national polls that show the presidential race with that large divide between Biden and Trump. In your experience, have you ever seen a time in a presidential year where congressional races and Senate races, down ballot races, go for one party, but then they vote for the opposite party when it comes to president?
Oh, yeah. It happens a lot because the theory is that people want checks and balances. They may like a certain candidate for president, but not with complete control. So they give one of the houses to the other party to be that check and balance measurement in the equation. And so it happens. But I think in this year's race, I just believe that whoever wins the presidency, his party will dominate in the House and Senate.
The other thing that I thought you pointed out, which I have not heard anyone else explain, when a electoral, we don't get to the 270 threshold and it goes to the House of Representatives, people automatically assume, because you have a Speaker of the House that's a Democrat, that this is just a floor vote and they're going to, you know, a party can just jam it down the throats. It breaks into the 50 state breakdown as it stands currently, no matter what happens on Election Day. Those new congressmen will be sworn in after the 1st of January. But that decision would be made with this current Congress. And in that breakdown, that actually doesn't benefit the Democrats. It benefits the Republicans.
That's right. It's done. The Constitution calls for that vote to be done not by individual members, but by delegation. So each state gets a vote. And depending what the makeup is within that state of Republican, Democrat, that will determine that vote. And right now, even though the Democrats have the numerical advantage overall, when you break it down by delegations, state delegations, Republicans have the advantage by, I think, four. So in a straight party line vote, which I'm sure it would be, the Republican side would prevail in that scenario.
You know, if you were brought on to consult the Biden campaign right now, you've got this story. It appears that whether or not the story had legs before Twitter and Facebook made their decisions, to filter this story, that's really where, you know, a lot of flags were raised. And then we started to find out from the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Director of National Intelligence, that there is no nefarious Russian intelligence behind it, that there is legitimacy, that this was the hard drive. What advice do you give Biden going into the debate? He did an interview with a local ABC affiliate in Delaware. He's called the lid on Sunday until Thursday to get ready for the debate. If you're advising Biden right now, what is the way that he should tackle this issue for debate? With, you know, that Donald Trump is going to be loaded for bear on this issue, regardless of where direction the moderator takes this debate, Trump is going towards Hunter Biden. What advice would you give Biden to handle that?
Well, Biden's got a lot of advantages in this debate. The first one is the question, if it's asked, it's probably going to be asked very infrequently and very gently. I would not be a bit surprised if Trump continues to go back to this issue, if the moderator does a Candy Crowley like she did in the Obama-Romney debate and jumps in as a participant. Wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. And the other thing Biden has going for him is, if you notice, he's very seldom fact-checked by the mainstream media. I mean, Trump can't say good morning without there being an article in the Washington Post. Was it a good morning? You don't know.
Right.
He lied. This guy says anything. And for example, in the George Stephanopoulos town hall, Stephanopoulos read a letter from a member of the, I think it was the pipe fitter or boiler makers union, blue collar union, questioning Biden's commitment to continuing fracking. And basically said, you have flip-flopped on this so many times, I think you're saying what you need to say now to win Pennsylvania, and you'll do something different once you're elected. And Biden said, well, you know, this guy's union endorsed me. They endorsed me. Well, guess what? The international union that this local union is a member of didn't endorse anybody. They took a pass. But this particular workers' union endorsed Trump. He says this stuff, and it just goes unchecked. So I think he will continue to deny, and rest on or have the assurance that it's probably not going to be a front-page article in the New York Times or Washington Post with a fact check saying, you know, there are legs here. And that's the other advantage he has, is this is just not being covered by the mainstream media. I mean, they want no part of this. And if they do cover it, they say it's Russian, which is nonsense.
I really respect the way you clinically diagnose the counties and the polls in which you're getting information from. You know, the importance of Northeast Ohio, what that meant to Ronald Reagan, what that really meant to in 2016 with Donald Trump. Traditionally, you know, blue collar, union, manufactured jobs, Western Pennsylvania, Erie, Pennsylvania, those areas around Lake Erie, that have gone blue in races that Republicans have lost. This is the Trump's trying to carry that into 2020. And if you look at the voter registration, it's in northeastern Ohio. It's in western Pennsylvania that you're seeing this 1.2 million aggregate growth of Republican registrations. The amount of non-GOP 2016 voters that are going to rallies that are now registering. We saw the numbers coming out with early voting. Democrats lead the mail-in. But number two is not the Republican Party. It's the blanks. It's the people that don't have a political party. And automatically, the CNN, the MSNBC people, they want to handicap that as being a benefit for Biden. But as we saw in 2016, that is why Donald Trump is the president of the United States. Those counties are crucial to how these states are going to go. And it really comes down to what Philadelphia and Pittsburgh can push out there. When you're diagnosing, especially Pennsylvania, a lot of attention's being brought on Pennsylvania, that margin has closed. Western Pennsylvania versus Eastern Pennsylvania, you know, this is a trend that if you're Donald Trump and you go back to late October of 2016, this is the exact same zip code he was living in then.
Well, you know, the political, Democrat political strategist, the raging Cajun, James Carville, once described the state of Pennsylvania as Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and everything in between is Alabama. That was Clinton years. It's even more so now. If you look at the voter registration trends over the last 10 years in Pennsylvania, at one point the Democrats had an 800,000, 900,000 advantage. I think it's down to about 133,000 now. And a lot of these counties in the regions you've just discussed, David, have seen complete turnarounds going from blue to red. So there's been a massive migration of the kind of blue-collar, working-class people leaving the Democrat Party because of its lurch leftward to the Republican Party. And that's one of the hidden factors in this race, and it makes it difficult to make predictions, is that there has been a surge of voter registration to the Republican Party in all of the key states over the last few months. In Pennsylvania, 216,000 new Republicans have been added to the rolls. Trump won that race by 44,000 4 years ago. They've just added a cushion of 214,000. That's above what the Democrats have done. So, and this is true of all of those 8 key states. And in terms of the early voting, it's interesting. Everybody assumed the early voting would go overwhelming Democrat. In some states it has. But in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Ohio, in Michigan, the early voting is tied between Republican and Democrat. In Wisconsin, it's Democrats plus 2. And in Ohio, it's Republicans plus 3. Now, in Pennsylvania, Florida, and North Carolina, it's heavy Democrat. But the states are split right now. Ohio, for the first time in my memory, is not going to be the bellwether state. Both candidates, both campaigns have pulled out of Ohio in terms of advertising because it's going to be a Republican state. Pennsylvania is the key. There's lots of demographic changes going on in Pennsylvania. And, you know, Trump needs to win Pennsylvania. I heard Kevin Hartwick this morning. He's absolutely right. Without Pennsylvania, Trump's is not back in the White House.
You know, I've heard that. I'm, you know, looking at the numbers. But again, Ohio and Florida, as of, you know, 6 days ago, you know, I'm watching CNN and MSNBC, and these are all in play. These are all in play. You brought up a point this morning, though, that I've heard nobody mention, except for the wonks and the politicos that are do this for a living. But you brought it to the attention of Western New York that there's internal emails going on right now. I could show the audience 4 of them that basically say, hey, you know, nothing wrong with morale building up and let's keep our swagger. But let's also be honest and sober here. This is not a runaway. This is not going to be a landslide. We've got to, you know, maintain. How much of that during COVID, when the Biden campaign, really the Democrat Party, stopped knocking on doors, they stopped their voter registration outreach because of the COVID pandemic. But Trump continued to work. The Republicans in these swing states continued to really, you know, put boots on the ground. That is what is going to carry you 2 weeks in front of an election, is the work that was done really during the shutdowns.
You're right. And Trump never stopped it. He's, you know, 4 years ago, Donald Trump did not have a ground game. It was all media and personal stuff. He's not done that this year. He has 256 district offices around this country and thousands of volunteers that have been working all year, going door to door, identifying new voters, getting them registered. His rallies, 20% of the people who go to his rallies are not registered when they go to the rally. They are when they come out, and they've identified friends who aren't registered that the campaign committee can go back to and register them. This has been going on for 4 years, and this gets missed by everybody. I think you'll appreciate this, David. I read a book once about what makes for successful generals, and they said it was written by a retired brigadier general, and he said there's 3 characteristics that all successful generals have. And I've always believed there's a parallel between a military campaign and a political campaign. But he said, number one, successful generals do not fight the last war. They understand that things have changed, your opponent has changed, technology has changed, tactics, strategies change. They don't fight the last war. Number two, they properly train, equip, and position their troops to win a battle. And in terms of positioning, they're experts at maneuver. And they said a successful general never wants a fair fight. A successful general never wants to put his strength against his opponent's strength. He wants to maneuver so his strength is opposed to the enemy's weakness. And that's true in political campaigns. And Donald Trump is not fighting the last war. He's been doing something that I kind of came up with over the summer when I read an article in the Wall Street Journal that made a light go off. I have said this many times with Susan and Brian over the last 4 years. If Donald Trump could just modify his rhetoric a little tiny bit, he might pick up suburbanites, suburban women, without losing his base. Why won't he do it? Why won't he do it? Well, it came to me in July when I read this article in the Journal, which analyzed the non-voters in the 7 or 8 key states. Now, we know that Trump's base is white, working-class non-college educated people. It turns out that the non-voters in 2016 in those 7 or 8 states represent 60 to 67% of them were white, working-class, non-college educated people, what I call Trumpsters at heart but not registered. He's been going after those people, and that's why he's not trying to get suburban women. He doesn't think he needs them. His strategy is that he can expand his base within his base, that there's literally millions of people out there in these key states. In Michigan, there's 1.6 million of these non-voters. Pennsylvania, 2.1 million, almost a million in Wisconsin. He's saying, if I can get those people, identify them, register, and get them out to the polls, I can win this thing with my traditional base. And that's what I think he's been doing. Now, this is totally unconventional, Dave, totally. Because in politics, most politicians and campaigns ignore non-voters. When I was running for office, we would get our walking list, our door-to-door list, when we go into a district. Didn't have non-voters on it. We took them off. In fact, we would only go to what was called prime voters, people who had voted 2 out of the last 3 or 3 out of the last 4 elections. That's who we concentrate on because you can count on them. So this is a completely untested strategy. As I said with Susan one day, I'm not defending it. I'm just explaining it because I don't know if it's going to work. I'm an agnostic on it because it's never been tried. It's brand new. But I think that's what he's doing. And when you connect other dots and you look at the registration numbers that are coming in these key states, Republicans out-registering Democrats 2, 2.5 to 1, you start to see this thing unfolding that this could be a very surprised night for a lot of people.
Carl Calabrese joins us from Masiello Martucci and Calabrese and Associates. You know, you bring up so many points. One of the demographics that everyone talked about in 2016 were Hispanic voters. You know, Trump running on immigration, the wall, this was something that was supposed to be almost kryptonite to that block of voters. As, you know, with Black Lives Matter and the issues in Minnesota and Wisconsin, we're seeing really odd numbers with African-Americans over the age of 50 and the approval rating of Black Lives Matter in Wisconsin and Minnesota particularly. It's alarming as to how Black Lives Matter's approval rating has dropped in the last 90 days. But one of the things that nobody is mentioning is that the Hispanic numbers, especially in Florida, in some of these key battleground states, you know, the only polls that I saw that showed Trump successful in his first debate were Telemundo and Univision. You know, this is not a demographic that you would traditionally, at least in 2016, say these guys are going to show up and support President Trump. And yet, one of the reasons why I think nobody's talking about it in mainstream media is that no one can really figure out why there is such Hispanic support for President Trump in a reelection.
Well, you know, this is one of the problems. The Democrat Party is a party based on identity politics, and the media, to a great extent, has bought into it. So they talk in terms of broad generalities, the Hispanic vote, as if it's monolithic, that every Latino is going to vote exactly the same way on one issue and one issue only, immigration. Well, that's just not true. And it's, you know, it's just not true. And I think Trump has locked into this. The fact of the matter is before COVID and before the shutdown of the economy, the results of his economic boom was felt very, very heavily to the positive by African-Americans and Hispanics in terms of the unemployment rate was at record lows. Normally, black unemployment is twice white America. They were almost equal. New business startups, average family income. It just, for Hispanics and blacks, it went right. It just went off the chart. People recognize that, and people eventually, I think, will vote their own self-interest. So right now, he's got anywhere from 40 to 50% of the Hispanic vote. If the election were held today in Florida, it's at 50%. And with African-Americans, interesting, he's got a 45% approval rating. Now, approval ratings are not votes, okay? But he got 8% of the African-American vote 4 years ago. Calculations I've seen is if he gets anything over 11%, it's going to be really difficult for Democrats to win. If he gets 16-17% out of that 45% approval rate, that's going to be earth-shaking. And that's where it is right now. So, you know, these are two new demographics that Trump may score with, and it certainly changes the political landscape in a dramatic way.
That is Carl Calabrese from Masiello Martucci and Calabrese. If you could stay with us for one more segment, I want to talk about New York 27, but Carl Calabrese, as you just heard, this guy's at a totally different level. I mean, this is not just talking points coming out of Fox News and MSNBC. That's analysis, and I truly respect his big brain. Thank you, Carl. We're going to hear more from you after this break.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, we're back with Carl Calabrese from Masiello, Martucci, and Calabrese. I mean, I can't tell you, this is... Carl's at a different level. He really is. Really smart guy, but more importantly, I just love the way he points out things that nobody else points out. And New York 27 is a race that I'm sure you've got your eye on. When you look at Nate McMurray and Chris Jacobs, you know, there's been the death of the Blue Dog Democrat, the old John Glenn Democrat, someone that could be agnostic about issues that the, you know, that partisan, you know, progressives want to die on the hill of guns, taxation, all the different issues that you don't see the Blue Dog movement anymore in the Democrat Party. Nate McMurray ran as that model of Democrat against Chris Collins. And I understand it's devastating to lose a race. It's devastating to lose to an indicted person who is inevitably going to prison. All of those things, take it into account. He really doubled down on the progressive AOC side of the party, knowing full well that the demographics of 27 in New York really haven't changed at all. And you have the opportunity to run against a wealthy, you can make Chris Jacobs, mold him into a Collins model, mold him into, you know, the privileged elite Republican bourgeois conservative, and still run as a Blue Dog Democrat. He went the opposite way. And I don't understand that metric. Why, you know, is it going to be successful? Do you believe that the absentee ballots, there's really no data point to show that New York 27 is running away from Trump. What do you make of New York 27?
You know, that's a great point you make, because I can remember listening to Nate McMurray one of the first times he was on radio, you know, when he was first running against Collins. He was on your station. He was on with Susan O'Brien, and he was slightly a right-of-center Democrat. I mean, he was for the Second Amendment. He wasn't in favor of impeachment. He wasn't in favor of increased taxes. And I can remember looking at my wife saying, you know, this guy could be tough with that platform in that district. He, you know, with an indicted candidate, he's saying all the right things. And you're absolutely correct. There's been a complete turnaround in that. I think it speaks to a couple of things. First of all, the left progressive wing of the Democrat Party is not the majority. It's about 30 to 35% of the party describe themselves as left progressive. But it's where the energy is. It's where the money comes from. It's where the ground troops come from. And I think he's recognized that. And I think he's betting on a turnout, that between a turnout of that committed left progressive base plus mail-ins, that he might be able to pull this off. He came pretty close in the special election against Chris Jacobs. I mean, on election night, it looked like a runaway, and then when all the mail-ins came in, it was, what, 5 points in that district? Now, that's a special election. We will have a much higher turnout from both parties in this race, but that's what he's banking on, and I agree with you. I have not seen anything to say that NY27 has turned on Donald Trump. It's probably still one of the most supportive congressional districts anywhere in the country, certainly in New York State. But I think that's what his strategy is, and that's what he's banking on. And it may be the best shot he has, given the demographics and the voter registration in that district.
You know, regardless of you know, where you stand with Delaware North and this whole situation that's going on right now, having a candidate file a lawsuit while they're running for office, it really sends an odd message to the constituent because, it, you know, regardless of what happens on election day, how much time were you spending on this? Why were you even contemplating? You could file a lawsuit next week, 2 weeks when the election is over. I don't understand that message. It doesn't really add any credence to your point of, and again, it's like, I don't want my congressman to be a victim of anything. I don't want my congressman to be weak or perceived to be weak, but I certainly don't want them, you know, if you can't handle, you know, the your own day-to-day world, how is it that you're going to be out there in Washington facing special interests and doing everything else? It's not a good look.
Well, I tell you what it did for him. First of all, it got him a headline above the fold in the city and region section of the Buffalo News. And you know the old saying in politics, I don't care what you say about me, just put my name in the headline. It did that. It allows him to bring up the kind of the class warfare issue of, you know, Delaware North, this big corporation, and all of that. You know, I agree with you, it's not a good look. But let me tell you what I think his single biggest mistake in this campaign has been is when he put out that tweet when it was found out that Michael Caputo had a very serious stage 4 cancer. And it was absolutely heartless. It was just beyond the pale. And that's the kind of stuff people remember. I mean, we get into the weeds of issues and statistics and all that, and, you know, that's what we do. But the average voter, they're looking, you know, they often look at, what is the character of the candidate? How does he respond to human situations? That was terrible. I don't know if he sought anybody's advice or he just...
I think he sought advice from Michael Savage, because he just did that the other day with Limbaugh, and that backfired horribly.
It was a terrible, terrible mistake, and it really brought into question his judgment. And if you saw the Buffalo News endorsement, yesterday or the other day, that was one of the things they said why they didn't endorse McMurray is because he has shown a very, very serious lack of good judgment.
Is there any hope that if in New York State you start to see these states that were long considered the blue wall in the Midwest, manufacturing, you know, all the Hillary had these locked. George W. Bush had a difficult time in the state. These weren't states that were completely off the table. But when you look at Illinois and you look at New York and California, and you know, you mentioned the old saying about, you know, Pittsburgh and Philly surrounded by Kentucky, Alabama. You could say that about California as well. I mean, there are Reagan, you know, did very well in California. There's a tremendous amount of red in California, but unfortunately, the cities are so blue, they always dominate, you know, the voters that are in between the cities. When you look at a state like New York, you could say that about us. I mean, Buffalo, Rochester, and then New York City in the middle of it. There's a lot of people that, you know, love their God and love their guns, and those traditionally happen to be Republican voters. If there's going to be a renaissance in blue states, it's got to come with voter registration. It's got to come with fundraising, but it also has to come with messaging. And it's almost that so many people just quit and say, what's the point? Democrats have this pipe dream that Texas is going to turn blue every year. And they shred their money and they all say, you know, we do this with New Jersey a lot. New Jersey's going to turn red this year. It's going to happen. But they don't invest hundreds of millions of dollars into it. The move that the Democrats are doing in Texas, is there any statistics that back that Texas has a potential to turn blue?
Well, yes, in the future. I don't think it's going to happen this time. But again, immigration has changed everything in this country. It's one of the major reasons why California went from a Democrat or a Republican state to a Democrat state. And the trend line is working that way in Texas. And, you know, Republicans have to deal with that. You know, there's nothing about the Republican message that will not appeal to minorities and Hispanics. But it takes aggressive repetition of that message. It takes groundwork. It takes you going door to door. It takes going into the minority neighborhoods. If you look at successful congressional Republicans who represent large minority populations and win, the key and common factor there is they go into the neighborhoods. They don't concede anything. They go and they meet with the block clubs and the service clubs, and they talk to people. They hear their problems and they respond to them. And unfortunately, you're right. In California, I think Republicans essentially have given up. The numbers are so overwhelmingly Democrat. They control the entire state, and it's now true in New York State as well. And I often remind people when they talk about New York, I say, remember, for every two of us in upstate New York, there's five of them in New York City. And that's just the math of it. And the only way a Democrat or a Republican is ever going to win a race in New York is if, I believe, you have an overwhelming scandal of some sort and a really, really depressed turnout in New York City.
So regardless of what happens on Election Day, the future of the Democrat Party is going to be the Democrats are going to be Democrats. Joe Biden, I think, is, you know, malleable. You're going to see a candidate that's going to appease that 35% of the base of their party. You're going to have the same talking points. You're going to hear about health care. But post-Trump, the Republican Party has a decision to make. Is it apostasy to, especially when you look at the Mitt Romneys, the Never Trumpers, the folks that jumped to the other side? Is there a place? Do we have, you know, you talk, I've heard you speak about the day after a primary is the day you hand out, you know, Band-Aids and hugs and you get everyone back together. I don't know if you can recover. This is truly damaging in it's such a consequential election year. The turn against your incumbent president, against the party, to say that you find Donald Trump so repugnant that you're going to essentially vote for someone who stands against everything you've said for 40 years in elected office, in the situation with McCain and Romney and all these other folks, that's damaging. And, you know, Republicans are vindictive as much as Democrats are. Is there a future for those Never Trumpers in the Republican Party?
Well, I don't think they're going to go away. I think they're waiting for the day that we can say post-Trump. It may be in a couple of weeks, it may be in 4 years, but I think they have already begun to plot out and plan out how they get control of the party back from the Trump forces. And there's going to be a real interesting dynamic within the Republican Party post-Trump. We've got some rising stars coming up. You saw them at the convention, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, some very interesting potential candidates in the Republican Party. And, you know, I've talked to some Republicans who say, you know, the Trump kids are going to try to run the Republican Party, and it could be. And so I think there's going to be some friction and maybe some outright fisticuffs within the Republican Party post-Trump, whenever that day comes. They're not going away. But I agree with you. I look at some of these never-Trumpers, and I say, wait a minute, you're giving up every ideological, philosophical position you ever held on abortion, on the Second Amendment, on taxes, on foreign relations, on China, on energy, because you hate this man. Your personal hatred. And I don't think anybody exemplifies it more than the writer George Will, who's syndicated in the Buffalo News. And I always liked George Will, but the last year, I just shake my head. His last book was called The Conservative Sensibility. He recommended it to me. I bought it and read it. He never mentions Trump once, but he savages the progressive left movement.
Right.
Book, historically and contemporarily. Savages it. And then he writes a couple of articles this year. He said, well, not only do we have to defeat Trump, but we have to punish the Republican Party for giving us Trump.
Yeah. No, it's so true.
House and Senate. So then a couple of weeks ago, he writes an article about California and how screwed up California is being run by all leftist progressive Democrats. And he called it, this is what happens when you have unchecked progressivism. And I called my buddy, and we've had this discussion about Will, and I said, explain to me this. This is what hatred does. Hatred takes an otherwise logical, analytical mind and completely flips it into total emotion. How can this man say, look at how screwed up California is with unchecked progressivism, and then say, but America, this is what you have to do at the national level. You have to defeat Republicans in the White House, House, and Senate. What does he think is going to happen? You're going to have unchecked progressivism, but yet the logic that has always been a touchstone of George Will's writings is gone.
Is that narcissism? Is it insecurity? Is it the fact that for the first time you had an elected president that doesn't need think tanks? That doesn't need, like, you know, there's no, I can't make money. I don't have any influence here. So I would rather blow up the game and be invited to a shrimp cocktail party in Georgetown rather than support my party.
That is part of it. And it's also the Trump style. Let's be honest. I mean, when I talk to people, debate people about Trump, I always start off the same way. I say, listen, whatever adjective you want to use to describe this man. I don't care what it is, if it's clean or obscene, if it's bully, vulgar, crude, rude, narcissist, I'll concede them all. But when you're done with all those adjectives, now we're going to talk about his policies, because I got to believe that you agree with the majority of his policies in most cases. You like when you open up your 401k statement, you probably got a nice smile on your face. When you go to the gas station and gas is, you know, under $2.50 a gallon, you probably have a smile on your face. That is a result of policy. And if you don't like his personality, you know what you can do? You can pick up your switcher, your television switcher, and go to Netflix. Get him out of your life. He's gone. But his policies can't be done away with like that. In fact, you probably welcome them. So it is part of just the, his style is so roughneck. I mean, this is like, you know, this is a WWF, basically.
You know, one last question for you, and I really appreciate your time today, and I look forward to having you on the program more. I keep hearing about these voters that only vote for Supreme Court justices, and that there may be a malaise where, you know, people that figure out that Amy Coney Barrett is going to make it through a 6-3 majority, and now they're just going to go away. Have you seen evidence of people right of center that only vote for the Supreme Court?
No. And in fact, that argument was made by another Trumper, a guy named Jonah Goldberg.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. People, 22% of the people who voted 4 years ago said their number one issue was court appointments. And Trump won that group by 70-30%.
Right.
People understand that if Donald Trump is reelected, he may very well get another appointment. Because you got one justice there who's 82. So they see that. And plus, I think people understand that the vast majority of court cases in this country do not get to the Supreme Court. They're settled at the federal appeals level. And Trump has appointed, I believe, over 200 judges to that level and could keep doing it. So courts, I think, are still a major priority for a lot of voters, and they're not going to go away just because Amy Coney Barrett got out.
Carl Calabrese, absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. Look forward to having you back. Massiello, Martucci, Calabrese and Associates, thank you so much. Excellent. Is that his music?
Can be.
It can be. Thank you so much, Carl Calabrese. I mean, he covered everything. I threw everything at him. No prep time. Just a brain on full function, doing everything. 30 years in politics out there covering all the bases. Thank you so much, Carl Calabrese. Massiello, Martucci, and Calabrese. You've heard him almost every day on the morning show. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time. What do you have, Joe?
Can I throw a shameless plug in?
Of course.
Tomorrow, 10:30, after the debate, post-debate coverage. Joe Beamer till 2 in the morning.
No, you're not going to go from 10:30.
If the calls are there, I'll go till 2 in the morning. I'm not here Friday, so I'll go as late as they want me to.
All right. Why make it 2? Let's go to 5 a.m. Let's see what you got.
You got it.
It's going to be a Joe Beamer filibuster all the way. We'll have a porta potty in the studio. What a great show. Focused. On point. Topics, what you asked for. Everything we were designed and meant to do. No, excellent. There's so much going on this 2020. Next 2 weeks, everyone's talking about this stuff. It's COVID. It's elections. You hear it everywhere. And having guys like Carl and Dr. Mark Epstein. Tomorrow, Dr. Jacob Neuheisel will be on here from UB. Give us the other side. I really like Dr. Neuheisel. He's a smart, brilliant guy, but just a wonderful human being. We don't see the world the same, but not on everything. But I really, really respect that guy. And I love doing Hardline with him until he just left because he had to have a child. One of those selfish people that puts family above politics. Imagine that. Wonderful man, wonderful dad, wonderful human being. We'll have Dr. Jacob Neuheisel on tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.